This is Charlottesville Tomorrow, an advocate for our future today. Charlottesville Tomorrow is a nonpartisan community organization working on land use, transportation, and community design issues. Visit us on the web at sevilletomorrow.org.
At their first meeting of 2013, the Metropolitan Planning Organization Policy Board made several changes, including their boundaries, their public hearing process, and their leadership. Charlottesville Tomorrow's recording begins with Kristen Zakos, Charlottesville's vice mayor and former chair of the Metropolitan Planning Organization Policy Board.
All right, well, we have actually about 20 seconds before the hour, but I'm going to call us to order here. We are all here on time. Thank you. Congratulations to all of us.
We never knew we had to be on time until we got that last.
Oh, we didn't know we had to. So here we are. And we'll try to keep this to an on-time ending as well, so we can keep our good record going. So do we have any matters from the public? Oops, what? Oh, anything that matters from the public do not have to do with any of our several public hearings. If you aren't sure, stand up and tell us what you want to talk about, and we'll let you know if it's on public hearing. All set? Okay. All right, the second is the review and acceptance of our agenda. The agenda look good to everyone?
I move approval of the
I'm happy to take your typos at the end and incorporate them if you don't want to point out every comma.
There was one
on
place.
Content.
On page 3.
Okay.
The fourth paragraph from the bottom, the statement says, it's a grove of sand walls. It said, VDOT wanted to put them there because all the data they had gathered said that they would need them. They want to strike that or say that we probably said that first sentence. I'm not sure where that VDOT wanted to put them there.
Oh, okay, yeah,
I can
strike that way down.
Just strike that.
Sure.
Mr. Thomas informed me that he was in the minutes twice. Do you have another one?
I don't feel popular.
But a thing.
Anything else? Do we have a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Second.
And all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, now we have the fun part. Election of officers. We traditionally switch back and forth by locality. So have you all thought it out and thought about it?
We
haven't talked about it. Well, would you like to talk about it now?
I would like to. Nominate Mr.
Dwayne
Snow as chair.
A second.
Okay. Any discussion? Any other nominations? All in favor?
All right.
So now we have a choice. I've gone over the agenda. I can keep chairing this one, or I can hand it over to you.
Correct.
Should I take it?
Okay. Vice chair. All right. We need to vote on the vice chair.
I'm sorry. I totally forgot. All right. So do we have a nominee for vice chair?
I'd like to nominate Mr. Pinju.
Second. Would you accept it?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Any other nominations? All right. All in favor of Mr. Hooch as vice chair?
Aye.
All right. So now, still game off. Keep going. You're welcome to take it.
No, that's fine. Okay. You're right. You did such a great job.
All right. Well, next January, we'll remember this and you hold on to it. All right. So, let's see. We have now a public hearing on our public participation plan. Sarah, would you like to give our introduction?
Sure. We brought this to you all at our last meeting in December. The changes that we've made, they're very small changes to the, just to get it updated. Committees have been updated and things like that. But the substantive changes, we have a few On page 5, basically we've made a change that instead of all NPO documents before prior to adoption having to have two public hearings, we've changed that to all NPO documents. The long-range transportation plan would be the only document requiring two public hearings, and all other NPO documents would only require one public hearing. We made that decision based on a number of factors, but recently when we've had you all approve documents, there hasn't been any comment on them, and we've had to advertise for two public hearings, which can come out to be approximately $500. And so it's expensive without much benefit in getting input. And so we thought it would be prudent and more helpful if we concentrate our public participation efforts another way and held one public hearing for adoption of the TIF and other documents that we work on. Again, the long-range transportation plan would still require two public hearings.
And where do we advertise this?
We advertise in the Daily Progress. We advertise on our website. I send out an email to the NPO stakeholders, and we advertise with the housing authorities in the area.
It's already on that page.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks.
And the reason the long-range transportation plan, you guys felt in the interior was because...
It's, well, it's a, pretty much a long game plan. I mean, we'll be talking about it for the next year, and we've been talking about it for the last year. But also, we just felt that the gravity of it is a visioning document, that it was important to maintain the two public hearing.
One thing I think that can happen with that one is that people read the press report about the first one, and then people get excited and want to come and weigh in.
So those are the major changes. We also clarified some language. For amendments, we advertise 2 weeks prior, and during that two-week period, we welcome comments. But that wasn't explicitly stated in our plan, so we've now made that a little bit clearer.
Where is that?
That was on page 6.
Public notice of amending major documents.
Yes, at least one public hearing will be held prior, and then the notice for amending major documents, yeah. And then underneath, it will be made 2 weeks prior for public review.
Okay. So that's for the transportation plan and the amendment. Do you have a public hearing or an amendment?
This actually isn't a change to what we do now. It's just we clarified our policy so others would be more aware of it. So we have the two-week notice for any amendment to these documents.
And we took off MPO public area public libraries, local planning offices, and VDOT and MPO offices. When was the last time someone commented to you?
It's not through. They would we have access to the plan there. Mm-hmm. I've just found that the plan hasn't been accessed. I went to the VDOT site, which is up past Cantops, and there were, I think, three NPO plans that were exactly where I put them when I dropped them off. It's just not an effective place to put them. And again, we just want this effort was just to streamline this, make it a little easier on us, but make sure we still are having the opportunity for public input. And then once the long-range transportation plan update is over, we look at this more critically and see what we can do to be more effective with public participation.
None of these changes contradicts any law or anything.
No.
I have one that I would like to just offer on this particular one, just because we haven't had anything just recently where people have really wanted to dig in, but I think it would be helpful to have it at least at this NPO office. We do have it here, so rather than cross that out.
Yes, it will continue to be here,
but I would leave that in the language so that people could see that they could indeed come and read it here.
Yes, I did. It's moved to somewhere else.
Yes, it's been moved to somewhere else.
But yes,
as long
as get the document here, always.
So not everybody has internet.
Yeah, true.
Hard to imagine.
Any other comments?
I'm not counting.
It doesn't say anything about administrative adjustments or administrative changes.
Yes, it does. That is a note. Oh, I mean specifically about adjustments. we have put that language actually in the TIP, and we determined, the NPO staff determined, but I can add that language to this to make it more clear.
And I think our practice in the past, Jim, has been when those adjustments take place, we inform the three MPO committees, chart, tech, and policy, about the adjustment, and that is noted on the agendas for each of those bodies so that if, you know, people are interested in that, they can find it by looking at the agendas for those meetings.
We also post adjustments on the website the same as your tips, amendments. Okay. And does this get reviewed every year? No, it gets reviewed probably every couple of years.
You changed that as well, right? You changed it from 2 years to periodic.
Did I?
Did I read that one? Yeah.
I might have.
Page three. Yeah, but, you crossed out 2 years to put it periodic.
That was because the 2 years had passed and we hadn't updated it. But the effort is to try and do it as much as possible, or as reasonable. So yeah, that was just to make it a little easier. I edited this in November.
You should also delete the every, because otherwise it's going to read
every
periodically.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Is there a product limit on a specific number of years? It's the same periodically. Periodically means nothing.
Well, every 7 years. The periodically is what's in the federal language. that's what was written. It's what motivated my change, but we could do 3 years. So 3 years.
Is periodically a problem to say in general with it?
You don't know when it's going to happen. Whereas if there's a plan and there's 3 years, you know when it's going to happen.
So 3 years from periodically? I would be comfortable with there being a specific time, just because there are some pretty kind of substantive changes.
Yeah.
And to kind of commit, because the four of us, five of us may not be still here, and like.
Okay.
We give guidance to the next folks to come along. And
okay, 3 years.
So it doesn't just go by and nobody notices it. What's the period? I don't know.
Anything else? I would need you all to approve the changes as amended today.
So
we need to conduct a public hearing first.
And I just want to say that I appreciate the fact that part of what happened here is making it more like the kind of regulations, mm-hmm. but also really paying attention to budget and costs mm-hmm. and if things are worth it. So. Mm-hmm. All right. Public, this is another chance. Would you like to weigh in on the participation policy? Yes.
Good afternoon, the Dean of Policy Board members. My name is Morgan Butler. I'm with the Southern Environmental Law Center, and appreciate the opportunity to comment on the proposed revisions to the public participation plan. First, I want to just commend staff for some of the changes they've made. I think it does help streamline and clarify several things, and I think there's some more clarifications added more recently that help clarify how many public hearings will be held before different types of planning changes. I think the most substantive change in here is the taking the TIP, which currently, the adoption of the TIP, not the amendment of the TIP, but the adoption of the TIP, which currently receives two public hearings and a 30-day public comment period, moving that to a category where we receive only one public hearing and a 15-day or two-week public comment period. And I can see some rationale for decreasing the number of public hearings from 2 to 1. I'm not sure I would recommend it. I can see the rationale, but I think if the decision is to move in that direction, perhaps a more responsible step would be not to simultaneously reduce that public comment period from 30 days to 2 weeks. I mean, a TIP can be a complicated document. I think giving the public, if we are going to do one public hearing, I think giving the public a full month to weigh in would be an appropriate item to couple that reduction in the number of public hearings. And that's all I have. Thank you, Mr. Wilson, for coming.
Anybody else?
I agree with Colin personally. I think it's good to have 3 minutes.
30-day comment period, but still one public hearing.
Yeah, right. I think that's a good suggestion.
Yeah, I would agree for that. Thank you.
Okay.
The public hearing is closed.
Any motion for adoption amendments?
With that one.
Yeah.
Second. Second.
Okay. Any further discussion? All right. Going once. Going twice. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. All right. The MPO boundary change update. Do you know, we have a presentation?
Yes. You all voted on this in September, but in looking through the process, there's actually quite a bit more than just saying we want to change
the
MPO boundaries.
The question before you get too far, I thought we made a decision not to change.
We changed some.
The change was to stay within.
The change was in Albemarle County.
Yeah,
within
Albemarle
County.
So are we re-discussing that issue?
Well, we're going through a process in order to make this official. So the goal wasn't to change the official rule or statement that you guys made in September. It was to go through this process so that things can be checked off at the state level.
And technically, we could, because otherwise there'd be no point in having a public hearing.
I suppose you could, yes. So in any event, you guys voted in September to alter the planning area boundary. We added new areas. It's in the packet.
I saw it in the chat. They're not so familiar.
Fifth page of the document, you can see the approved changes. This is a proposal that we've put together. This, along with the resolution that was in your packet, will be submitted to Marsh Beal at VDOT, who will send it up to Secretary of Transportation for his approval. And so those are, that's the process we're working on. We need to submit a formal proposal. And so that's what, with a formal resolution, so that's what this, why this item is coming back to you all, is we need to have it a little more structured. We do need to post a formal hearing.
Sorry, may I ask a question about the app?
Sure.
The Charlottesville, Virginia says population of 2,359.
That's of the urbanized area.
That's all okay. Thank you.
So,
really fast. That density.
So are there any questions about the proposal or the process? Okay. Any public hearing? Would anybody in the public like to comment on the expansion of the boundaries for the MPO? Those in public hearing? Just to reiterate, there were choices of expanding it further than this, expanding it not at all. We took the parts that were within the county that we felt would benefit from being part of the MPO and stopped there.
Do you have the colored section of this that would be cut off?
Yeah.
One more.
One more.
There we go. Right there. Yeah. The areas in purple are the ones we're adding.
Yes.
Right. Yes. We did put it over.
Yes.
All right, so now do we need a motion?
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
we have one. All right, one.
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion? All right, all still in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
And
positive things.
Just to make it clear, your actions specifically approve the resolution that's contained in the packet, am I correct about that?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the minutes will reflect that. Okay, good.
That's exactly what I mean.
All right, we have one more public hearing with the presentation first. We have this one is a little more of a broader view. Public hearing on the TIP amendment to the U.S. 29-250 interchange improvements.
Okay. You're all well familiar with this project, I think, by now. We've been talking about this for several years now, and a preliminary design workshop was held by VDOT here a couple of months ago that actually drew a significant number of people and quite a bit of public comment. One of the steps that has to be taken to move this project forward is to incorporate additional funding into our TIF. As you know, we as the, or you, I should say, as the MPO Policy Board, are required to approve any expenditure of federal funds for a transportation improvement project, and you're required. So this project, since it was last updated in our TIF, has had some rather large cost increases, primarily due to some additional items that have come into the project since that time. Sound walls, the retaining walls, the realignment of the sidewalks around the interchange. But the basics of the project still remain the same. It's an additional lane on 29 on the southbound side from Hydraulic down to the ramp that goes to westbound 29-250 bypass, and an additional lane on the ramp itself, and also in the merge section between the end of the ramp and the Barracks Road interchange. And although this project will provide some capacity improvement and some congestion relief, it is very much a safety project, because there's, as you probably noticed, quite a number of accidents that occur up there at the merge section on the highway, because people get up there and have a hard time making the merge and basically freak out and stop or merge too quickly or do something else that leads to... It does say needle, but I think you know, those signs at some point become part of the scenery. And so it is a very unsafe location, and so although, as I mentioned, this is to some extent capacity improving, it's primarily a safety project. Most of the funding that is being put into this project to help fund these additional costs are safety monies, and those are referred to as HCIF monies in the tables that are on the second page.
So that's why it says that it's reconstruction without adding capacity?
More, yeah, basically, because it is considered a safety project as opposed to a capacity project. Yes, sir, Mr.
You said the lane to Hydraulic Road South. Is that correct?
If the additional lane is on 29 from Hydraulic South to the interchange.
Hydraulic southbound.
Southbound to the 250 route bypass.
It doesn't go all the way.
It doesn't go all the way to Hydraulic. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I see what you're saying. Oh, okay. Sure. So
I'll be happy to have two Hydraulic.
On the second page of the item in your agenda, there are really three things here. There's the what we call the new TIF box that shows the new funding that is proposed for the project. In gray down here, we have what was the former TIF box, the box that shows up in the existing transportation improvement program. And then we have a map and some additional information to try to make the document a little bit easier for members of the public to understand. And so this has gone before two of our committees. It went before our chart committee, and they recommended that it be reviewed. And as you can see in the table on your memorandum, it was a split vote with 5 in favor of reviewing it and 4 not. It also went to our tech committee, which unanimously voted to recommend that the policy board approve the proposed amendment. And so it comes to you this evening with those two actions by our standing committees. It has been advertised, and so it would be appropriate at this point to conduct the public hearing before your discussion of the item.
Any specific questions about the clarity or information? Great. Open the public hearing. Do you have any comments on this project? Yes.
Well, I'm Jeff Warner, Piedmont Environment Council, I'm also a city resident. This is an important project that we've been talking about for a long time. It's critical to that knot in the bow tie there between hydraulic and the 250 bypass. We know that. We know that the Western bypass will not alleviate congestion on 29. So we need this project so that local traffic can continue to get the local businesses in our community. And I'll just say, I continue to be suspect about that what we're going to see is these prices go up as VDOT finds a way to incrementally eliminate projects here and there. And it's curious that this thing jumped almost $7 million because of sound barriers, that sound barriers were eliminated from Western Bypass in order to get the cost down. So I just think that we're all going to see a higher cost of the Western Bypass, and this is the piggy bank that VDOT and the state are going to be looking to, is these projects that are now unbuildable. And I just also ask, I realize this is in the city, but the MPO is voting on it as a whole, and that includes two county representatives, and I don't recall this being discussed before a supervisory meeting. So I'd like to put that out there. I think a decision to potentially squelch a project in the city needs to have a full discussion before a supervisor, if people are going to vote.
We went to, may I
ask
this?
I heard supervisors talking about it. Go ahead. Yeah, we,
this was working from my office, went from the MPO to see Senator Perry Ellen. Congressman Perry Ellen, and asked for the $5 million. So I don't really understand Jeff's point of the county not being involved because we were all there when we asked for the $5 million.
Yeah, I think the county's been very supportive of this project.
We have
put it into our kind of others category. And also, I think that the county project at Stonefield is making it even more necessary. There's so much more traffic here.
And all the conversations that we've had independent of sitting on the board has been how fast can we move this along.
Oh, I'm sorry, you know what, I forgot. You're right, we're starting discussion because each one we've only had one comment, but I realized there was another hand. I'm sorry, thank you. We were out of order.
I'm going to like what I have to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. My name is Paul Grady. I live just outside of Crozet. I have been speaking against what is now called the Best Buy Ramp Project for over 10 years, though it seems longer. I followed the whole 29H250 study intently and was appalled at how the consultant could recommend the worst idea and let the best idea get discarded without even a little study. I was distressed when I heard that the interchange at Hydraulic and 29 had been dropped. And I wonder how that area is ever going to function at a higher level without some improvements. Again, I will say that the businesses on the west side of the two blocks of Emmett Street should not be sacrificed for through traffic. Through traffic should go somewhere else. And the median should not be sacrificed because that will forever preclude the construction of a light rail system in the future down the median from U-Haul to Rutgersville. That is a project that I have been speaking in favor of for more than 20 years. And now that the cost of the ramp project has skyrocketed because of the need to construct those ugly sound walls, it is time to drive a silver spike through the heart of this vampire project before it sucks the life out of this part of the city. Now that the Army Corps of Engineers and the EPA have recommended that VDOT look at alternatives to the 29 bypass, I think it is time to take a new look at the whole 29H250 area again instead of going ahead with this band-aid solution that really only makes things worse. Personally, I am in favor of the 29 bypass. For over 10 years, I have advocated for an elevated expressway directly over existing hydraulic roads that only takes a small part of the Kmart parking lot and a small part of the Dominion power lot. Rugby Road would have become a dead end, and I think that everyone who lives there would jump for joy if that were proposed. If the MPO would only model the expressway concept and then have a rough cost estimate created, I am convinced that you would be amazed at how little it would cost and how well it would function, and as an added bonus, it would eliminate what will be the last stoplight on the 255 pass once the interchange for the Meadow Creek Parkway is completed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who would like to comment? Okay. The public hearing is closed. Carry on. Yes.
Could you bring the slide back down to where it shows the chart? I guess up there. I chair the chart committee, and as you can see, the yeses were basically initially to kill the project or recommend killing the project, and the noes were to let the project go on. I commented to the committee that I fully believed, given the history, that if we killed this project, we would not see another dime out of Richmond for the rest of our lives. And since I believe the project needs to go forward. I believe it is a safety issue. But it does concern me that the price has gone from $5 million to $11 million because two things were left out, the retaining wall and the sound wall, which were not included in the Western Bypass bid, nor was the landscaping included. So if we see a doubling of the cost of the Western Bypass, we're going from $250 million to $500 million. And these are not our funds. These are funds that will come from our grandchildren, their grandchildren. I mean, it's scary. And I can recall when we had the public discussion in the county office building about the Western Bypass, I asked, and I can't remember whether it was to Dwayne or to Rodney, you know, if we didn't do the Western Bypass, would we get any money or get any of the loads? And the answer was no. So I basically think that we were being blackmailed by Richmond, the Commonwealth Transportation Board. And this last issue, when our representative from the Culpeper District, Jim Rich, he was the only person that objected to the Western Bypass at one of the CBT meetings. He was willing to distribute the whole money, all those monies, throughout the other districts. And I think because of his opposition to it, he was recently released from the Commonwealth Transportation Board. And those two things, we don't get any more road projects if we don't do this one, and if you speak up against it, you're gone. Scary. And although I think this project is a good project, I'd like to see it move forward, I have some real concerns about the way we do our planning and the way we handle state funds.
Well, the way I'll add to that, not only the way we do our planning, but the way our planning is disregarded.
Well, that's true.
We did do planning, but didn't improve the bypass.
Well, the planning was done in, to me, the planning was done in Richmond by intimidation, which is not a good way to manage things.
So this project is needed, and it is a Lexington County was supported, and so I would say I don't want to oppose it at this stage. I don't want to support it.
I think it should be supported.
Also.
Yeah.
I think we have a majority of votes on this.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll take a vote, but I just had a question before we go to that. The last report we got from VDOT, they were saying that there was going to be interviews with the families of the people who lived in the area to see if there were going to be sound walls needed. Do you know if that's done? Is that what was the result of that?
Yeah.
It hasn't happened?
Yeah, yeah.
So when will we find out what the result of that is?
I'm not exactly sure when the process, I don't have any funding in plan, but the sound wall process, as Brent explained it, we're still learning ourselves.
It's a new regulation, right?
Well, it's been around, but this district, the only place we have sound walls right now is on Warrington Bypass. That's it.
our district. So we have a lot of experience with it. Having said that, the folks in Richmond, as well as Town Hall experts, are involved with us moving through it. At some point during the design, we have to get a little bit farther into design to determine exactly where and what the sound will be, and we'll be approaching the citizen. So there was, I think we handed out.
Yeah, I remember. I just couldn't remember the time.
There was a whole process. Yeah.
So
certainly,
I
think your question is, when will we find out if the citizens push back?
Well, my question is really, if this includes the sound walls, and we don't yet know if we'll need the sound walls, is this a maximum?
No.
Or could it go up again?
Yeah, well, I think the way it was presented last week, that's in the minutes, it was the question was, we believe it's the worst case scenario, and hopefully it will come in lower than that. We don't want to keep anything. Just to remind everybody, the original $4.5 or $5 million estimate was an estimate that came up with no engineering. So this was the first engineering, and again, keep in mind, we're developing this through the federal process, which was something that wasn't accounted for a year and a half ago. So those things have kind of compounded to do that. So, the believer, the best judgment is this is the worst case scenario. So we don't have to go back and ask again. I think that would make a suggestion. Hopefully, shoot you coming out of that.
I've heard one thing that you might want to correct me if I'm totally wrong, but I heard that the walls are in effect eliminate the necessity for taking lane for the right of way. This way they can keep the right of way within that span.
The retaining walls. The retaining walls are necessary to keep
the right exactly. Way.
Otherwise, you could back of the house or 6 feet. You want to slow the valve off the right of way. So it's trying to. The retaining walls are needed to minimize the impact. In the south, the sidewall, there's some uncertainty still at this point around the utilities. We've got utilities in the middle of 29 down there. So there's still a fair amount of engineering uncertainty, which we try to address with the estimate.
I'd like to specifically just address the gentleman talked about the possibility for light rail down the middle of 29. While I would love to see light rail down the middle of 29, I don't really see any possibility of that happening in my lifetime. Is that
does anybody else hold up? The state allowed anything to go into the Union Street because they used to put utilities in the middle, and now they have to go to the outside. So my view is they probably never let light rail. There's nothing in the middle of it anyway. Unless it was designed that way,
man, it's a hypothetical. I'm interested right now. It certainly is. Very costly.
And my guess is that the infrastructure for pedestrian access there is not so complex that if by some miracle we were able to have light rail down and we couldn't take it out, I can't see that it precludes that forever.
Okay. It might as well. Yeah, very minor cost compared to light rail.
You know, if somebody wants to give us light rail, I'll raise my hand, but I think that's. All right. So do we have a motion to approve this?
So moved.
Second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any against? All right. Thank you. And thank the chart for their really fleshing out of this, because it's important to really dig into the pros and cons. We heard them. We just didn't do it. All right. We have now, just have a cover for this, and I took it off and now I can't see anything on it. The Park Bridge Transformation Enhancement Grant. I'll have to present that. Basically a report, right? And I heard it last night, so I can stop it.
Request from the city to get a third phase grant through the MAP21 program, which is the child of the enhancement grants. They're just renaming it, repackaging things. We're in a position where we have had enough design work, where we got a first round grant to pay for design work, we got a second round grant for construction. The estimate for construction of the bridge was right on. We figured out through the design that to get from the bridge down to the side of the park that has the softball fields cost as much as the bridge, if not a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So we're here to ask for a third round of enhancement funding to complete construction of the McIntyre Park Bridge over railroad tracks. The request is for $80,000 with the city provided $120,000 in match, and we're here to get the MPO's resolution as part of the grant application package. This one requirement.
Can you repeat the money again, please?
$120,000 from the city with $480,000 coming from the program for a $600,000 addition to our current $350,000-ish for construction. So if we're successful in this grant, that would be the end of this project, and build it will be done, move on to our next project somewhere else.
And this is the walking bridge.
This is the walking bike bridge.
Bike.
This connects the two sides of the park, but it also means that from the interchange, I was out this morning, they're working on the bridge behind the fire station now. That trail is opening, so this bridge is a piece of that longer network, as well as the simple connection to two sides. So we do feel positive we're only taking applications for existing projects that need more money to meet bike best MPA standards. So we feel that we have a small competition this year.
I would certainly like to compliment Chris on his great work, and we are connecting our communities by putting in this type of structure.
One of the things later in our agenda when we're talking about some of the things we're looking for connectivity is the fact that bikes are pretty much interconnected only in pods or in bubbles, I think you call them, and this is a good bubble popper. That's one area to mind. All right, any further discussion?
I think it's great.
Is that a motion?
Yes.
All right, second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, here comes the painful part. FY12 Annual Listing Obligation Report.
This year is not all that painful.
Good.
Basically, this is the all the funding that was obligated in the last federal fiscal year, which was October 1st, 2011 to September 30th, 2012. And so this is just sort of a listing of what was obligated, what was spent. And there's not a lot going on during that year. There's some stuff going on with the secondary and urban projects. Also on page 7, those are the amounts for projects that are grouped in our TIF. I do have an appendix, if you guys can see it, of the specific projects, but it's about as interesting as this right here. So I didn't include it in this one.
Does anyone like that?
Okay. Also, we're not obligated to do this, but I think it's helpful for our entire process. So on pages 8 and 9, we show the funds obligated for transit for Kat and John throughout that year. So any questions about the annual listing? I will need you all to approve this.
Motion?
Second?
Okay.
On favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Functional class system.
We're reviewing functional class system. The functional class system, as your memo explains, is that roadway designation. It's arterials, collectors, and local roads, and it helps for a variety of reasons, but what it really helps with design standards and for our purposes, maintenance allocation. I've been working with Chuck at VDOT to try and get the particulars of these identified, and included also in your packet is a list of changes that have been recommended at this point. So right now we're at a review and comment period. You all will need to approve this in March. I should also note that local staff is also reviewing this at this time. So with regard to the county, it looks like it's likely that there will be no major impacts, even though there's lots of changes because of the way the county, because VDOT maintains county roadways, the percentages are less, the percentages for each type of class are less
malleable. But there could be impacts in the city, so those are being reviewed. The major issues, again, are changes in designation could affect maintenance funding, and road changes, changes in designation could also require different design standards for roadways. So that's basically where we are. Other people are reviewing it at this time, and we'll have a final map in March.
So I was really confused going over this, and it didn't look like we were taking action, so I didn't call. But so we're, like on the first one, Rugby Road, downgrades principal arterial per MAP 21 NHS review process. Downgrade it to principal arterial, downgrade it from principal arterial, what is the X class is what it is, and the prop class is what it will become. So PRIN ART is principal arterial, MIN ART is
Minor arterial.
Okay. With all the space that we have not taken up by comments,
are there any other questions about
the workshop? Sarah, have you been working with the planning commissions? Because we just reviewed our transportation part of our comprehensive plan, and we should be talking about the same type of definitions.
Okay. Can you these are FHWA definitions, and this I might have Chuck help me explain this part, but this these were recommendations that came down from FHWA.
Really, recommendations that we've been working with consultants to develop basically these changes to all the policies.
Well, I'm not talking about specific changes, just the reference. We ought to have a commonality of when we talk about a minor or arterial road.
The languages
should be the same in both comprehensive plans.
Okay. The language we have, though, what I'm saying is the language we have for those definitions is from FHWA, so we can't change that.
I think what is being said is it would be useful to coordinate with Elaine and Missy.
That's fine. Yeah.
So if there's a way that, since we're all doing these plans,
there's language in the plan that
uses a commonality of
language.
And if they can't use the same language, it might be useful just because they all have a section on, you know, the MPO and the role of the MPO to even discern between the different road types if we're not all using the same common language.
Okay. And I was curious about Massey Road. Show up as a local on the new map. There's currently Major Paul as a collector. Mr. Manco, no reason. But that's a bit.
Comments that are on the sheet or the comments that aren't put on the sheet.
Okay. But what about the no reason part?
We don't have the maps out here. On the maps, they didn't show Massey Road. They showed Massey Road. The section from Cooley down to Emmett as a local.
Okay.
And then they had the Cooley Road, they had labeled Massey. So I was just clarifying that needs to be kept the way it currently is, but to change it.
Okay, so there's no reason to change it?
Yes.
Okay, got it.
There's really not a lot of information in here to give you to ask a question. But I would like to ask David. David, do you see anything here that we should be questioning? There's not enough information.
No, we've been looking at Andy Zorman and the AMB. I don't know if Andy can provide the comments yet, but we were preparing to provide comments to the DJ, but we didn't see any major issues.
Thank you. It's really, we look at this stuff every 10 years because there's a mandated review. But frankly, for us at the local level, this has fairly limited application, the main one being some funding issues. But in terms of the actual use of the roadway or even the way it's considered in our comprehensive plans, it's not a very important issue. We do it because we're basically required to do it.
Now that I understand what these comments are, I appreciate your comments on the first one. Because it's, when the bridge was closed, there was a lot of traffic going through there, but it's not a good road in any meaningful way.
Yeah, you've got the parking
areas right there on the arena. But other than that, it's just a connector between the city and the intersection. Didn't carry a lot of traffic. It's still a part of that network.
Not, I mean, no, Sunset Avenue is the first one on the
list. Yes, yes. Because that's close. And when they, we had a consultant that did all this for me, they didn't realize that the bridge was closed.
Right. They just saw that it was a well-used road at that point. But thanks for noting that. Any other? I guess we'll have more time to dig deep and talk to our own staffs about this because they probably understand better than we do.
Obviously.
All right. Thank you. And legislative update.
And David Blunt, who is TJPDC's legislative liaison, is coming here from a series of meetings that have been held today in Richmond at the General Assembly on various transportation bills. Sarah is handing out right now a summary that she's put together of the really large number of transportation bills that are under consideration, but David is not here yet.
We could skip this and come back to it.
Yeah, could I ask
him? We weren't so punctual.
Could I ask him to do that when he finally gets here?
Is that all right with everybody? To just hold on this until he gets here? If he doesn't get here, we'll just start without him.
We'll try to explain all of this to you.
Okay, so we'll skip on to presentation of the Commonwealth Transportation Board.
Okay, you may recall, I think it was about 2 years ago, the Secretary of Transportation asked all of the state's MPOs to come in and make presentations to the Commonwealth Transportation Board about the issues and projects that were priorities in each of the particular MPO areas. And it so happened that we made our presentation to CTB at their December meeting in Roanoke that was coordinated with the Statewide Transportation Conference. The Secretary has once again asked that the MPOs come in. I think they started that process in September and have been doing a couple of months over the course of the rest of the year. Several months ago, I queried you and we decided to volunteer for the February CTB meeting that will be held down in Richmond. When we did this 2 years ago, the way we approached it is that you as a policy board suggested particular things that you thought should be presented, and then we at the staff level worked to put together the presentation and shot that back out to you several times to get your review and input. And so I was hoping that we could, you know, take the same sort of approach. We felt like that was fairly effective the last time we did it. And so we were hoping that we could take a similar approach as we move towards the meeting next month. Sarah and I have been kind of kicking this around and have several things that we wanted to suggest that we might be including in that presentation, and obviously this is all for your review and direction. But as we were looking at it, we felt that we needed to start by thanking the CTB for the work they've been doing to fund our priority transportation projects here in the region, not just, things like the Western Bypass, but also the Best Buy Ramp Project, Hillsdale, the Meadow Creek Parkway, et cetera.
And the Moon Bridge.
That's right. So just wanted to hit on all of the different things that we're working together on and emphasize the fact that we appreciate their support and the fact that those projects are moving forward. We then thought it would be important to focus on what we kind of view as maybe the biggest requests that we're going to have coming at the CTB and ultimately at the General Assembly over the course of the next few years. And the ones that we've identified, and this obviously is, per your direction, the 29-250 bypass widening, which we believe is going to be a very necessary project, but as we've previously discussed, also very expensive.
Before you
finish, sure, go ahead.
Has the project ever been discussed by the city in comprehensive plan of the city?
No, it's not been discussed at either of the local governments, to my knowledge. We've not asked for that sort of discussion to take place. The second thing that we were going to suggest was the I-64 interchange at 29. Again, I think a very high cost item. The third is another item that we've had some discussion of here, a stable bike ped funding source to replace the reductions that have taken place in the transportation enhancement process. As you may recall our discussion, the funding that comes to the state, or previously came to the state, out of the enhancement process has been cut to a matter of about 30% of what it was formerly due to changes at the federal level. And so we don't intend to recognize that CTB does not have discretion to invent a new funding source, but I think what we would like to ask is perhaps for their support for legislative action to create a new funding source. And then the third thing, in a similar vein, would be their support for legislative action to create a funding process for regional initiatives similar to the funding that we were seeking several years ago to provide a funding base for the Regional Transit Authority. As we look at, you know, the work we've been doing on our long-range transportation plan, you know, most of the transit projects that we're looking at are really outside CAT's existing service footprint, and that's, you know, I think reasonable and expected because that's where the growth is taking place. But at the same time, if we don't have a funding source, it will probably be difficult, if not impossible, to expand transit to serve in those areas. And so we think some sort of funding process that can be accessed at the regional level is really the answer to that. So those were the ideas that we came up with, but certainly I understand that you might have other priorities for the presentation.
One comment. I worry about putting 250 bypass in the heart of the city and expanding it.
Are you talking about just the intersection or the whole bypass?
I'm talking about the 29 bypass from Barracks Road down to the interstate on the west side.
Yeah. From Barracks Road.
If you were to get on at Barracks Road or the bypass and then going south.
Right.
You're not talking about the part that's going through the city. So.
Not the part that's up here in the city. Okay.
That'd be my yard.
Your backyard.
Steve, can you repeat what the first one on your list was?
That was just thanks for the funding that has been provided for the various priorities that we've been working on.
Okay. And so you listed four things. Are you floating those as in we would choose three out of four?
We're floating those as the ones that we think are going to be the most important things to be talking to CTB about over the course of the next couple of years, recognizing that you may have other, those are just coming from the staff level, what we think. We'd certainly be open to either other, you know, ideas to be presenting or taking some of these out. This is really just, you know, discussing ideas at this point.
Open.
Well,
you can ask this.
There's a question because I attended last year, and it seems to me that, and I know that we took a different approach last year than what we normally do, but if I remember correctly, the idea last year was to really focus on what we had done as a community, and we recognized that that was a slightly different approach. So seeing that as a baseline, assuming that they have mainly the same people on the board, then the idea is that this would build upon that baseline that we developed last year.
Well, and I think so, and I guess the thing that, you know, we were keeping in mind at the staff level is that our situation vis-a-vis the CTB has really changed in the past 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 2 years ago, the Western Bypass wasn't even under consideration, much less, you know, moving forward. We had a number of other projects that were sort of our priorities that also weren't moving forward. And then due to events
since over the course of the past 2 years, the Western Bypass and all of those projects that were previously our priorities have moved into the funding stream. So at this point, what we're looking at is, you know, the need to start focusing attention on what we think the biggest issues are going to be here going forward now that, you know, the things that were our priorities in the past have are moving someplace.
And you mentioned the 49, the 64 interchange. I believe that's on VBI's list also, didn't it?
The widening of the bypass from Barracks down to the interstate as well as the interchange are both in the draft version of the V-Trans long-range transportation plan that's being reviewed right now. So, but I, you know, I think it's, these are going to be such high-cost items. I think it's important for us to get in front of them and say, yes, these are going to be priorities for us and we'll work with you on.
Do we have a priority for 64? Do we have a choice in that? The 64 that's adjacent to the city of putting some lanes in there.
You know, we talked about that early on in our long-range transportation plan process, Rodney. And what our analysis showed was that at least out to 2040, 64 was not over capacity, and widening it to six lanes didn't really provide a measurable benefit within the urbanized area. So we didn't carry it forward for further consideration.
I would like to see emphasis on transit a little more earlier than later. Because,
start with funding for regional transit?
Yeah, because this is better city and county both. And I would like to see them have.
One thing I was wondering is when we're talking about stable bike pedestrian funding source, which I think is really important to what this NPO really pays attention to, really trying to figure out how to do that interconnectivity. I wonder if a way to, you know, if this is just a shopping list, you know, I can imagine they're sitting there looking at them because they get a bunch of these. And we have some really nice kind of envisioning plans for the Northtown Trail. Mm-hmm. And just to show, like, what amazing things we could do if we had that sort of funding. You know, that this is a plan that we have that would link, you know, federal employment centers to downtown, you know, the whole kind of coolness of that whole project.
Yeah, and
something
I think,
to bring to them to put it on their radar.
And I think that's the argument that we would make, is that bike and pedestrian in the Charlottesville community has the potential to serve a lot of trips that are currently going along the road and creating congestion, et cetera.
And that we're kind of a leader in that in the state, and so...
But we need a stable funding source
to make it happen.
Yeah.
Well, of course, Richmond is going to be having an international bike race, which will have a significant impact on their economy. Mm-hmm. So they should be well aware of the influence of bicycling. Rephrase it in the right way.
I'd really like to showcase that as something that we have kind of in our hopper, that could be important to make happen.
I guess what makes sense to me is following on what I said earlier in some of the other comments is that we did set this baseline for what we've done as a community last year. I'm sure there's a rationale for why you've chosen these, and I could probably sketch it out. But obviously there's, you know, the I-64 interchange is going to be more important if we have more vehicular traffic coming to our community. If we're solving some of those larger circulation items for the larger roadways, but we still need to deal with our local transit, then I think the bike ped and the transit. So what I would advocate for is that as far as the choices of things, they seem to make sense to me, but to at least give one line or one slide that explains for each of those why it's being brought forward as a priority for us.
And I think I can do that pretty easily, Julia. I mean, the way I put it to people is that it is a transportation system. People make choices among the modes based on what works for them in their life situations. And to have an effective transportation system, they need to have all the choices available to them, you know, to provide the, you know, travel needs that they have. And so the top end vehicular end of the system works, has to work, but the same thing can be said of the, you know, the bike and pedestrian end. That has to work as well.
The trail that she was giving, I had talked to Commissioner earlier about that, along with trying to get transit paid to the airport. Well, I haven't heard anything. I don't know that Jim has seen anything in the line on it. I would also like to entertain that being part of, more of a part of what we're talking about.
Kind of the visioning as well.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
As the same, I think, with the transit, what we could do with the transit authority, what it would achieve, you know, how we would get people to work, how we would get people off the road.
3 years ago, I probably would bring someone one day. I do agree.
Yeah. Okay.
I really,
well, it's all connected.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Have we ever, as a board, put together any or identified any park and ride areas?
I'm thinking
further out.
We've identified the need for additional park and ride areas. I don't think we necessarily specifically identified park and ride areas.
No, we've got a real nice designed crossroad.
Mm-hmm.
But I was wondering if we had anything south of town planned, or on west or north of that.
There's the folks in our rideshare program, who I don't think are here this afternoon, do a lot of work with VDOT on park and ride lots, because park and ride is kind of a critical aspect of rideshare. And they're working, you can understand that park and ride lots work most effectively when they're, you know, quite a few miles out. And so they're working, have worked all, in the past year on a park and ride ride arrangement with the Walmart in Ruckersville to allow part of its mammoth parking lot to be used for park and ride. They're working on,
for carpools.
Yes. They're working on arrangements in Nelson County for some park and ride lots. I don't know if you've ever driven up and down 29 during the day in Nelson County, but particularly at the north end of the county along 29, almost every road you look off of, you know, to one side or the other, you'll see cars parked. And that's what we call casual, you know, casual park and ride.
About six of them.
Yeah, because people, you know, there is a location around 6 where people just park their cars all over the place in the right of way.
Interest the Sherwood Farms, which is the old 29 road.
So there's, we're working with park and ride, but it tends to be further out. It's actually outside the boundaries of the MPO for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
So it's coming through our rideshare staff.
But it is every end of the city. So
yeah, that's right. The end of the city, sure.
I mean, just because I deal with 9 and 10, we have a number of them that we build mm-hmm. with state forces in the north part of the district. I mean,
yeah,
well, if you call Denver all the way up, there's got to be 6 or 8 parking lots that we build or mm-hmm. have built.
Yeah, I think down the road that could be a big part of public transportation also.
Mm-hmm. But I think the PC actively engaged to support that goes a long way. Because that is outside the MPO area, but it is within the PC.
Yeah.
This past year, I think Dan worked with the U.S. forces and got the one in front of the downtown, East Town. So got that one paved and got part of it started from trash.
So what I'm hearing is maybe to lead with the two non-car priorities, because they're more Charlottesville, Elmore, you know, that they're more kind of unique to us, because everybody needs roads, and you lure them in with that and add the
okay. road charge. Okay, but you're basically in agreement with those four topic areas and
steps suggested?
Okay.
All right.
Well, we'll put together a draft of that and push that out to you for your review. Here, you might get it out at the beginning of next week, but more than likely the beginning of the following week.
Do you know what time?
The deadline to get it back to you. I mean, when you send it.
I don't know that. I think the deadline down at VDOT will be several days before the meeting.
No, I just mean that when you send it to us, say, let me hear from you by Wednesday at 3 or something.
So it doesn't sit in
my inbox.
Yeah, okay. Okay, and I'll put that in the heading.
Thank
so
you.
That,
I appreciate it.
Excuse
me? Helping you manage us.
What time is the meeting?
10.
Okay, I don't miss it.
And is there anyone I could ride with just there? Because I'm here flying out.
What is it
today?
The 20th of February. So it's third Wednesday.
And you
it'll be at the big auditorium down at VDOT headquarters on East Broad.
So
when?
Richmond.
Yep.
All right. So, Mr. Blount, welcome. We were actually running ahead of schedule.
Okay.
So we bypassed your item and we're
going back. Oh, okay.
No, it's fine. You're right on time.
And we've already gotten that handout.
Okay. I guess the latest that I can tell you as far as what's going on today, actually a lot, there's a lot of moving parts as it pertains to the governor's proposal and various proposals that
he started. I just have a quick question that segues from what we were just talking about. On February 20th?
20th.
Well, there's a few days left. It's just closing up. Will there be any point in our... Because we'll be in Richmond to go see anybody, or is that something that you want to get us to?
By the time we get to February 20th, most of the work is being done in budget. Conference committee and the bills will be included out, but it's kind of hard to say at this point.
Well, know that we'll be there.
Yeah, and today, this afternoon, the House Finance Committee took up all of the House transportation funding bills. The result of that exercise was basically to either roll, as we call it, many of the bills into Speaker of the House's bill 2313, which is the governor's transportation package, or to lay some on the table. Laying on the table is a nice way to say, I can outright kill it, but technically they're still alive. The governor's package was not taken up today, and in fact, this is a subcommittee this afternoon. The governor's bill was not taken up this afternoon. It will come before the full committee next Wednesday. Between now and today and next Wednesday, largely behind the scenes, there will be a lot of maneuvering and gelling of the different pieces and parts to put into what we will see as a substantive version of the governor's bill. So what's out there right now in House Bill 2313 and its Senate counterpart, which is Senate Bill 1355, will look much different by the time we get to next week. On the Senate side, all of the Senate transportation funding bills actually were being heard in the Senate Finance Transportation Subcommittee starting at 4 o'clock this afternoon. And they have been going through and letting the patrons of all of those bills present their bills. I actually got a report from someone who's still sitting in the meeting. Some of the bills, the patrons have said, I'd just like to, strike this, lay it on the table. Some have requested that it be rolled into another bill. But they had just a brief presentation on the governor's bill. And the Secretary of Transportation evidently said, we'll be bringing forward a substitute to the full committee next week. The other, what I would call the other major Senate bill that was put out there back in the fall by Senator John Watkins, who's a member of the committee, had not been taken up at the time when we had this report. So I think, I guess my message to you all today as far as this discussion is that anything that you all may want to say, any position you want to take, statements you want to make as to, I think, at a concept level of the various issues that are encompassed in the bills, the timing is pretty appropriate because I think moving forward over the next 10 days through the end of next week is when all of this is going to come together. There is a deadline really almost by the end of next week for all of the bills to be out of committee. And then a week from this Sunday, the House and the Senate Money Committees will be presenting their budget. So a lot of this will have to be involved in that as well. So, Steve and I have been talking. I know that you all have a number of, I haven't looked at this packet, so the issues that you have before you, but he and I have talked about, I think, several of the kind of big picture issues related to the funding and revenues. There was a bill that contains some regional components to it as well. And then I know, as you all previously talked back in the fall about the SJR 297 study having to do with transit, that is actually something that should come into play as well. Yeah, that's kind of where we are today, and that's kind of from the policy part. There's also the political part of it, that will come into play as the House and Senate look at their packages, and as we move towards trying to reach an agreement that satisfies both sides. I can't sit here today though and tell you that when we get to the end of this process, there will be something to agree upon. That may happen, that may not.
And so, really, as Sarah and I have been reviewing all of these bills over the last couple of weeks, and there are 20-plus bills here, and they all speak to various combinations of things that might be important to us. But we really identified sort of four things that we thought might be important enough to us that they were worth comment. The first one is, not surprisingly, funding. There are a number of these bills, I would guess half of them, are in some fashion or another aimed at transportation funding. There are, as I think you're probably aware, the governor's proposal, which has been put forward by Republican members of both House and Senate, in two different bills, does several things to increase transportation funding going forward. Probably the most radical is he's proposing to eliminate the gas tax on gasoline, which is at 17.5 cents and has been at 17.5 cents since the middle 80s, and replace that with a 0.6% or 0.8% increase in the statewide sales tax. His argument for making that change is that it will provide a broader, more equitable funding base across the state, and the sales tax, except in a very, very deep recession, almost consistently goes up from year to year, whereas the amount of gasoline being sold and as a result the gas tax that is being coming into the state coffers has been steadily declining.
Well, that'll stop if they charge $100 for every car that comes.
Another part of his package is what's being referred to by Kristen is a $100 additional registration fee for alternative fuel vehicles, which I interpreted as being electric vehicles from the way it was described in the legislation. And I think the reasoning behind that, as it was described in the handout for the governor's proposal, is that those vehicles are not paying any or very little gas tax, but they are having impact on the state roadway system, and so the intent is to at least partially make up for that. There was also a proposal for I think it was $15 a year increase in the vehicle registration fee, as well as a proposal to increase the amount of the existing sales tax that goes towards transportation from a half cent to 0.75 cents, and that was to be brought in over the course of a five-year period. So when all was said and done, it ends up being a fairly significant increase in transportation funding. Much of that was to go to maintenance. Some of it was to go to capacity-improving projects, and in some cases, some specific projects that are high priorities in the major metro areas of the state. The Dulles Rail Project was one, and I think one of the tunnels in Hampton Roads was the other one, right? So that was sort of the governor's proposal. And that, as I noted, that is being carried by Republican members of both chambers. Other proposals included a proposal to increase or to implement on a statewide basis a wholesale sales tax on fuels. There currently is such a wholesale sales tax on fuels in the Northern Virginia area, but it doesn't exist anywhere else in the state. This would expand it to the entire state. Interestingly enough, something that we've not figured out is that the bill that proposes it puts forward a very complicated approach that's based on figuring out the average that's being paid by, you know, or being charged by wholesalers across the state and setting a tax rate based on that average. In Northern Virginia right now, it's simply 2.1% on the wholesale the value of the product that's being sold by the wholesalers.
Is that like kerosene, natural gas, any kind of fuel?
It's my understanding it's just gas and diesel. I don't think it's kerosene or anything else. The third funding issue is that there were several bills that had regional options, so that a region, and I think in most cases they were talking about PDCs, could in some fashion identify a list of projects and then through some local mechanism increase, in most cases it was the sales tax, to pay for those projects. Most of the bills that Sarah and I looked at had quite a number of strings attached to that process. And although we like the idea of a regional funding mechanism, we didn't particularly like any of the bills that we saw. And I think the fourth thing that was going on was attempts to index the existing gas tax so that instead of being stuck at 17.5%, it incremented for inflation over the course of time. So I know that's a very brief and probably difficult to understand explanation of the alternatives that are being discussed. As David said, it's hard to say at this point if any of these will pass or if some combination might end up actually coming out. And so with regard to these various funding options, I think it may be the best approach for this board may be to decide if you did support some sort of increased funding for transportation and how you might want that increase in funding for transportation to look. So that I think is one of the biggest issues. The second big issue is the issue related to the changes in the allocation formula for federal funds to the transit agencies. We did a letter about this at the last meeting, and there are at least two bills, I think, that are pushing that change to the allocation formula forward. And so if you want to take a position based on the letter that you did at the last meeting, this might be the time to do it. A third issue, what was our third issue?
Well, the regional initiatives.
The regional initiatives I already mentioned. Right. And then we had a fourth issue.
Just kind of like state money being released.
Yeah. Oh, that was it. Was we have an ongoing concern that any change in the funding formulas at the state level could ultimately lead to decreases in the funding that actually flows down to the local governments, the city, and to VDOT for county maintenance. And so we felt it was important that we make the point that we did not want that to happen. In the packet that was distributed to you by Sarah, the main item in there is a summary of the transportation bills, so that you can look through those and become a little bit more aware of what's going on, or at least what the current status is. Second thing is the governor's handout, I think it's 8 pages long, describing his transportation proposals. And then the third thing is the transportation funding position that has been taken by the TJPDC Commission and also approved by all of the TJPDC member governments, including City of Charlottesville and Avalon County. So with all of that said, it's tough at this point in the legislative process, I'm sure that David would agree with me, to craft a position given how fast things are moving and the vast number of bills that are out there. But I think what we'd like to try to get from you today is some direction on your biggest concerns and priorities so that as David has opportunities, he can represent those with the members of the committees, the leadership, governor's office, etc.
Thank you. If I could just add two comments to what you just summarized. In the governor's package also includes a provision for funding the intercity passenger rail operating fund. We haven't talked about that much here, but beginning in October, the state will be responsible for funding intercity passenger rail service. That equates to 6 trains total in Virginia. There's currently no dedicated funding source to provide that service after October of 2013. It's been previously paid for by federal funding. The estimated shortfall by 2018 is $162 million, unless something is done. And then if that service is discontinued, because no funding is identified to get a train slot back to provide that service at some point in the future, is exponentially more expensive. So that's a huge provision in the governor's package, and I encourage you to really express support for that. I know that the train service here at Charlottesville is very important. We're looking at extending service to Lynchburg and Roanoke and Bristol. So I know that's very important for this area and other areas in the state. I don't know to what extent that's addressed in the other transportation bills. I would also mention that the governor's package includes additional funding for transit, which we estimate will make it so that implementation of SJ 297 will not result in cuts to transit operators. So it kind of levels the playing field there. It enables us to increase funding for transit so that transit operators continue to operate at the level they have, but also allows us to implement some performance metrics to improve efficiency.
So, Steve, it seems that the governor's package of bills doesn't see the money, raw money for transportation, and many of the areas that she mentioned. So why should we not support that?
I think, just from my own point of view, certainly there's a great need for increased funding for transportation. And I think we have, as an MPO, supported that over the course of years. I know the PDC has supported that over the course of years. And then the critical issue is, what's the best way to do it? Does it make sense to shift our transportation funding from, at the state level, from gas tax to a sales tax basis? Does it make sense to make some of the other changes that have been suggested? And so I think that's really the issue. Do you want to continue to support increases in transportation funding, and do you want to weigh in on the appropriateness of any of these particular mechanisms?
Sales tax is going up and gas tax is going down, so it seems to be a pretty easy choice.
Well, I would say that the gas tax is currently is a declining revenue source. Depending on the gas tax right now, it's about $50 million, and that doesn't really tend to move. But I think, if you look at the one proposal that would apply on a percentage basis rather than a fixed cent basis at the wholesale level, then you're going to see something that is going to generate more revenue because it would be like indexing the gas tax to be on a percentage basis as opposed to staying no matter what the price of gas is, it's going to stay at 17 cents.
I'm concerned that the governor's proposal, while it might raise money in the short term, it's really disincentivizing anything that might lead to long-term solutions. It's having a gas tax that's low disincentivizes saving gas. It's going to make it cheaper to drive, so people drive more. Putting the fee on alternative fuel vehicles disincentivizes people who are getting away from using gas at all. I would take the opposite, which is increase the gas tax, or at least index it, so that it's a stable source of revenue. And the fact that it's being replaced by a sales tax, especially in a state where sales tax is on food, which is, penalizing people often who don't even have cars, paying a higher percentage of their income on taxes on necessities. To me, this is it's the very opposite of what I would picture as a way to raise money for transportation.
Has anybody talked about excluding food?
Well, yes. The governor's proposal does exclude the tax on food.
Yeah, that's the main part of the concern.
And that would be one piece. But other kinds of sales tax, if you buy soap or anything else, mm-hmm. clothes for your kids, all that kind of stuff, it's still going to be there.
But I can also.
But yes, the worst part is food.
I can also understand that the electric cars are using the roads and the traffic lights, and they do have a responsibility to pay for some of that also.
Yes,
and even though I agree that
there are other goals that we have as a state, which is reducing carbon emissions and all this kind of stuff, and they're contributing toward that.
Yeah, and if more and more people do that, I don't know, we're not going
to
decide that here anyway.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden,
yeah.
Where does the money come from to do anything? If we stay under the present system. So
these are very tough issues.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear the food is being considered. Is that actually part of it?
What's that?
Still part of it?
The food is actually part of it.
In the government bills that have the government's proposal in them, yes, the food is excluded.
And some of the others as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Did Mr. Watkins get his bill produced?
It is in, but it hasn't been presented yet today. And there was also a House companion to that, which is one of them that was
available
this afternoon. That's the Russ bill, 2063 or 2179.
Is there anything still in place with just the Transit Authority?
Our Transit
Authority? The ability to raise money?
No, I think that's part of what we were talking about in terms of the local initiative. In fact, I was sitting in this finance meeting this afternoon, and Delegate Pascano came in and sat beside me, and we were talking about what was going on. And, we went back to our initiative 4 years ago, in which, we sought the enabling legislation for the Transit Authority, which was approved, and also sought, a local option by referendum, increase in sales tax for Charlottesville and Alabama, which was not successful. So I think at least from his perspective, he's looking to see that there is some local or regional initiative that's part of the package. I know in a conversation I had with Delegate Rust, who was sponsoring the bill I mentioned a minute ago, that had a provision there. He said that he was very supportive of and hoped that there would be something in the final package developed on a regional or local basis, but that he didn't anticipate that it would look like what he has in his field. So, I think that's something that, if you wanted to throw out, I thought the proposal that we made, including a referendum, both governing bodies would have to take votes to approve any such increase. And we were very specific at saying that the funds would stay here locally and deal for both transit and non-transit projects. So you generated the money, you made a tough decision to do that, and then you would just keep it from generating. So that may be something that at least conceptually, and again, not knowing what that might ultimately look like if there's a provision to build.
I guess the tying into sales tax is likely through transit to benefit the people who are paying it in the highest proportion, so it seems a little less disconnected than the transportation.
I would say on this transit bill, there has been some discussion just this week about the performance measurements, and they're not specified in the bill, but I think at least some of the folks that are expressing some concerns about the bill, and I toyed with the idea of maybe we could put some more specifics in that in the bill, or in some way be able to tie some of the dollars to some kind of a performance incentive, so that you know, your local agencies already have DRPT approved transit development plans that lay out what they're looking to achieve, so that they can measure some progress against those and be able to maybe have some incentivizing to do that. But that might be one way to be able. This one, the transit issue it's in this debate, but I think part of the politics also could shake out. It could be part of the package. It may end up not being part of the package. If there's not a big package, then maybe there is this piece that is approved. So, it's just a lot of moving parts. Things are very fluid. There's a lot of negotiating and politicking that still has to take place.
So maybe the question, I mean, obviously we as staff members would like some direction, because I'm almost 100% sure that tomorrow my phone is going to ring and David is going to say, so-and-so wants to know our position on the governor's funding proposal. What should I tell him? Maybe to kind of simplify the question here, the first thing
that we might support the commitment to an increase in transportation funding for the county. I mean, that's the easy part, right?
Is there support for that, sort of simple statement that there is support for increased transportation funding? And obviously that is an increase in some sort of revenue-generating measure.
And other modes of transportation.
Right. So broad-based to provide for all
multimodal transportation.
Right.
And if it comes down to raising the sales tax, I'd like a statement in there that we definitely would like to see food excluded.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I would like to say, with a preference for an index gas tax, and barring that we would want to see a tax, at least if it were through sales tax, but if not.
Or I think if you want to look at our transportation funding position, what we say in here is that we want to see increases in revenue, but that those revenue increases need to be tied to specific transportation systems or transportation users. So I think the previous discussion has been to oppose or maybe not support something like a general purpose tax, like the sales tax. Am I correct about that, David?
Yeah, I think if you look at the second line of the position statements, this revenue is to be separate from the general fund. Gasoline tax is a non-general fund. Obviously, the sales tax is a general fund. And there's some concern that the increase in sales tax, your other state local programs that rely on general fund dollars, you're not going to realize any in future growth.
Or the next year, they decide to use it for something else.
Yeah. So I think that's a concern. You haven't seen Virginia Municipal League or Virginia Association of Counties, despite being under heavy pressure to come out and make a statement. I think the position have not done so yet. It's fine. I think they've got their governing boards that are coming in next week to Richmond, and they will be, so that's not time yet.
Virginia First Cities took a position for an increased gas tax.
So perhaps the way to structure this, based on the discussion I'm hearing, is that you support increase in transportation funding through new revenue mechanisms, that you would prefer indexing the gas tax or the sales tax at the wholesale level because it is attached to the fuel, and that sort of your last option would be the sales tax. But if it does end up being the sales tax, you want food excluded.
I'm not sure that's in the order that I would put it.
Okay.
You're saying that was a consensus. I don't know.
Well, I'm putting that out there. I'm putting that out there.
Okay.
So certainly if you want to discuss that and rearrange that, I'm just trying to summarize it and get it in front of you so you have something to kind of chew on.
Well, I feel strongly that that cars that are electric or any other alternative fuel cars should be paying something to help maintain the roads. And I feel that even though we're trying to encourage more of that, the more that we get, the less money we have to maintain our roads. So I think that that is an important part of it to me.
But of course, what we're saying, if we do a sales tax, is that from the majority of the funds raised will come from Virginians. I understand that the gas tax, fuel tax, will remain on trucks and buses.
Diesel.
But for the most part, we're saying that we're going to take care of our own roads, and if we have any interstate traffic, they can go across it free. So to single,
which then say, per person, we're going to pay more.
But see, they'll drive over here to get our gas, and why the other do
something. Well, I buy my gas.
So they're just coming from North Carolina.
Gas is cheaper. When I go to North Carolina, I buy my gas here and go to North Carolina.
That's a good point.
That's a really And I would say that although I don't like the $100, I don't think that we should put opposition to that into a letter because I think we are divided. And I can see why you think that, that makes sense at a certain level. I just think there's a greater good to incentivizing people to buy them for other non-transportation priorities.
Just remember, if everybody bought one, no matter how much you had it indexed.
And I think in 10 years we might need to look at that.
Yeah.
I think at this point it's still kind of an outlier position, and to do anything at this point that would keep people from doing it.
See, and the more people that we can get going to bikes, and the more to public transportation, all the revenues for the gas itself, hopefully will continue to go down. But
by the same reason, Kimberly pushing the rail, we should keep people off the rail.
And the governor's, what I heard, I don't know if it's true or not, but from what I heard, the governor's plan was the only one that included rails.
That included what?
Rails in his plan.
And it is long.
That's another reason why I support it.
Yeah.
Is because it's pushing all of these things that are important to our community.
Absolutely.
I think Steve's right. It's a complicated issue.
It is.
Obviously, from the number of ways that they're trying to approach it, and some unique ways.
So you could just simplify and go back to your original statement, where you said we support, more funding for roads and things that we need, and with emphasis on transit, rail, and bike, and pedestrian, and so on.
But also, shouldn't we be dealing with this evolution issue? I mean, not only say what we need more funding for, but also say what they're trying to compact in terms of what we already have.
It's already happening. Yeah. To a certain degree. I haven't heard that, like we were hearing, a year plus ago. Big bad word definition. I haven't been hearing that, and I don't think I want to mention it.
But certainly conspiracy theorists have suggested that the reason the gas tax is proposed to be dropped at the state level is to create a local option gas tax that localities can then impose to fund their own maintenance programs.
Mm-hmm. And when that becomes part of the law, I would agree to taking it out of the state.
So I just, in terms of this position statement, I'm picking up on that. Is there anything from this that we want to reinforce in our comments?
I think we would want to, make sure that we emphasize that the money that comes to the localities, either, the city of Charlottesville or to VDOT, provide for local road maintenance and improvements, needs to either remain stable or increase, in a manner consistent with the rest of the funding.
Okay.
needs to increase. And the government remains vacant.
Okay, sorry. Yes. It needs to increase.
So I felt like I was seeing nods, though, for a preference for a gas tax index and, or a wholesale gas tax with a third choice as sales tax without food. Is that the sense of the room?
It's not my sense.
Okay. So one,
I don't know that anyone else.
We have three yeses?
Yes. Yes.
All right. So can you live with that if I... with one dissenter?
One dissenter is fine.
Okay. All right. The most of us feel, the majority of the MPO feels this.
Okay.
And so I think to not, I mean, my inclination would be say not sales tax at all.
You're not hurting my feelings. That's fine.
Yeah, but my inclination would be not support a sales tax at all. But I think that to say that it is one option without food, I think is a reasonable. So is that enough guidance for now?
I think so. Is that enough for you?
Yeah.
So we just kind of recap. We're going to say we support increases in transportation funding. Multimodal transportation funding through revenue mechanisms. That our preference would be for an indexed gas tax or a sales tax on wholesale fuel sales, or last, shifting to the sales tax basis.
However, if the sales tax is the chosen option, we would
strongly suggest that not be included.
Strongly support.
Strongly support. And that we continue our opposition to the proposed revisions to the transit funding formulas unless there is a commitment to increase transit funding sufficient that the transit agencies are not hurt.
And we support the intercity rail.
Okay. Did I get it all?
The only other issue I speak to discuss is the regional component. And I'm looking at position statement number one on the position statement down near the bottom of the page where, again, I think this is in there from the time in which the two jurisdictions were talking about a regional transit authority. But I think that's a pretty broad statement that, we support the authority to establish mechanisms to fund, and it's transmitted. Mm-hmm.
And we said that before, so.
Yeah, so I think we can continue.
Is that all right?
Make that
add them. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, well, if that's all we need on this, I mean, that's all we need at the staff level, that's all the board has to say.
I'm amazed at how kind of calm you look
Actually, back when he had hair, he didn't have any anymore.
Thank
so
you for being there for us.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that discussion. That's a different issue and a difficult issue, and I appreciate your patience and your wisdom in working through all of that. I think the
regional mobility goals.
It's regional transportation deficiencies.
Oh, there it is. Yep.
Is the next one. As you're probably aware, as I think we announced at our November meeting, we received a grant from the TRB, from Transportation Research Board, to implement a pilot project for what's called TCAP, which is Transportation for Communities. And it's really very similar to the process that we've been going through, but it's actually a very structured approach to long-range transportation planning. We will be moving. We've gotten the grant, but we've not got a grant agreement at this point. We expect to be moving into those activities in February, and we expect them to extend for about 14 months. But as part of that, we need to be doing two things at this meeting. And this is really based on previous discussions that we've had in the last year. The first thing is that we need to be specifically identifying what we believe to be the transportation deficiencies that we need to focus on in our long-range transportation plan, and secondly, to focus on our mobility goals. So Sarah just passed around this package of handouts. In your packet, you have a memorandum that summarizes in bullet points, you know, sort of the major headings or major descriptions of what staff views as the transportation deficiencies that we want to address in the long-range transportation plan based on discussions that we've had at this committee and at TEC and at CHART. The package of maps that just came around are designed to be a starting point to help you identify where those deficiencies exist based on the data that we have available. So we've broken, we view the system here as being really sort of three main modes that you as an MPO policy board deal with: the road and freight system, transit and rail, and bike and pedestrian. And so just very briefly, for roads and freight, what we've identified based on our past discussion is that the deficiencies are roadways where we are expecting to see levels of service E, F, or F minus by 2040. And so the first two maps are colored to show the roadways where we're expecting those types of levels of service by 2040. The first one shows the entire MPO area. The second one, focuses in on the core of the MPO area, the city of Charlottesville, and the immediately surrounding areas of Avalon County. As you can see, quite a few areas where we're showing up with those levels of service E, F, or F minus. If you focus in on them more specifically in the core, you can really see where those particular facilities are. One thing that we have been noting that I don't think we had enough discussion of when we brought these to you last year has been the fact what we've been recognizing is that we really have four routes that run, that connect our core downtown and university area with the interstate. We've got 29, the Fifth Street Extension, Monticello, and 250. And all of those routes are at either E, F, or F minus in the future year. And as we've been looking at our modeling and doing some experiments with that, what we've noticed is with the exception of 29 over here, we're not having much of an impact on those negative levels of service. So I'm not suggesting that we talk about adding projects for consideration, you know, in our long-range transportation plan process right now, but I wanted to bring those to your attention so that you can be thinking about them. The second group of deficiencies that we had are transit deficiencies. And the main thing that we were focusing on, or that we felt the main way to identify those transit deficiencies, are locations where we either had employment that was not accessible by transit or residence locations, population, were not accessible by transit. So, Marie, could you go back? So this is the employment map. The shaded areas that you see represent the amount of employment in those areas of the region. The light areas have employment of 0 to 250 people, all the way up to the darkest areas, which have employment of over 2,000 people in those particular areas. And it's not surprising, I think you all know the region well enough to understand where the major employment centers are. Overlaid on top of that is this series of gray dots, which are all the transit stops for CAT and UTS within the region. And then those are all buffered by a quarter mile to indicate that the employment locations within a quarter mile of those transit stops. Based on, we did some GIS analysis of this, our total employment within the MPO area in 2040 is expected to be $122,240. Based on the current layout of the transit system, 77,000 of those jobs are within a quarter mile of the transit stop, meaning that 63% of our jobs are within a quarter mile of the transit stop. Could we go to the population? Really the same thing on the population map. The more darkly shaded areas have higher population. Again, you can see all the transit stops and the buffers. By 2040, we're anticipating an MDO population of just a little bit over 188,000. And just for comparison, the MDO population right now is about 124,000. So 188,000 by 2040. We're expecting that 75,582 of those folks are going to be within a quarter mile, living within a quarter mile of a transit stop, and so that'll be about 40% of our population.
In modeling that population, are you assuming that people are more likely to move to a place or live in a place that is close to a transit stop, or is it sort of random?
No, it's this is based on the development patterns that the city and county expect to see, both from approved projects and also what they've got in their comprehensive plans. So what this basically shows is that by 2040, 60% of our population won't be served by transit. So that is sort of our transit deficiency. Then we looked at bike and ped deficiency, and we took a similar approach. This, again, is the same employment map. The gray lines that you see are bike facilities, either separated paths or bike lanes. And these are existing today, not what we expect to have on the ground in 2040, but existing today. These are buffered by 200 feet. 500 feet, I'm sorry. So to represent, sort of the access range for people to get to a specific bike facility. So again, we have employment of 122,000. Only 44,440 have access to the bike facility system, and so only 36% of our employment will be accessible by a bike in 2040. Why don't you go ahead and read. Same thing for population. Again, 188,000 people. 44,790 are within the access footprint, and so only 23.75% will have access to those bike facilities by 2040. The other way to look at it, of course, is that about 76% are not going to have access.
So with this modeling, it would be relatively easy to say if we had the Northtown Trail, what that percentage would be.
Right. I think, we actually as a staff had quite a bit of debate about how to do this, and we like this approach because it not only shows, what the areas that actually have access, but it really allows you to show the benefits of particular projects. Now, I think as we get into the document, we're going to do a more advanced version of this based on bicycle skill levels and different road types. But for right now, this is what we've got.
One thing I'd like to see work into the modeling is to expand what the university is doing with rentable cars, zip cars, and with the bike racks that you can just come in and pick up a bike.
Sure.
And so as we combine that with rapid transit, which sometimes our transportation system, right? But they can come into town, they can pick up a bike, and it works really great in some of the areas I've been in.
And all the things that you're talking about have the impact of basically decreasing the number of vehicles that are needed to serve the same population. Because you're either moving trips off the bikes, or many people are using a zip car, or sharing a zip car, so to speak, rather than having their own. And then using bike, ped, or transit for their other transportation needs when they don't necessarily need a car.
Plus, a lot of these people are like moving into Stonefield and some of these other communities. They have everything they need right there.
Right.
And their need for a vehicle is going really good for them.
Yeah. Okay.
Shouldn't the title change, though? If there's no committed right? If you're all of these ones after the road projects, so you're saying it's existing and committed E&C.
Oh, yeah, so you're right. That's a good point.
This is our existing and committed road network that we're showing projects like within.
But are there any? I mean, are there any committed bike projects?
Or not bike projects, uh-huh. More like developments that will be coming into the area by 2040.
Gotcha. Okay.
Do you want to go ahead and do pedestrian? So this is pretty much the same concept for pedestrian, except it's based on sidewalks and on separated pedestrian network. As you can see, we actually have a lot more of that than we do of the bike facilities, not surprising. But it is clearly concentrated in Charlottesville and the immediately surrounding areas of Albemarle County. One thing I would point out about this map is that from personal experience, I know there's a lot more sidewalk out here in Crozet than is currently being accounted for, and that's primarily due to the fact that we just don't have mapping for that area. That's something that all of us are working to improve. So in this case, again, 122,000 employees, 62,372 of those jobs are accessible by walking, just about 51%. And then on the population side, 188,000 population, 67,999 of their residents have access via those walking facilities, or 36%. So basically what we had hoped to identify as deficiencies in our plan were the level of service E, F, and F minus roadways, and then the areas that don't have transit access, bike access, or pedestrian access, and then a few specific issues such as the need for additional regional rail facilities. So what we would like, if you're okay with that, what we would like to ask you to do is approve this to be used in our long-range transportation planning process. And this has been reviewed by both CHART and TEC, and they have recommended it to you.
In the second map, one of the things you mentioned, that the one thing you were seeing, and that is the choke points on the edges of the UDA. And I think that's important as far as just kind of getting community interested in that. But I think really if we look at it, we have choke points every place the city and county intersect.
Well, and it's true. It's where the city and county intersect, and it's also where we go from our core downtown and university area out to the interstate.
Well, and then the other two are really, you know, to other population centers that we've just kind of added in our MPO, which, you know, going out 53 and going out Ivy Road, we're kind of choked up there as well.
Yeah.
I guess I would counter that with that if you look at UDA, that's where you also have the richest resources.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and really they kind of run together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is great.
Yeah.
Yes, it's very nice to hear. Really helpful.
So, could we get a motion to approve us to go forward with sort of this summary list of deficiencies?
And is this going to be available online so people can blow it up and see it deeper, or is this it?
I think it's already, of course, is it going to be available online with the MBO package?
It is not available online at present, but I can see it tomorrow.
Yeah.
That would be lovely.
I think we would probably see it. So I think we have to get a motion. Yeah. Right.
Do we have a second? Second. All right. And all of you? I'm assuming there was no further discussion. Okay. We have one fewer member here as we go into regional mobility goals.
Okay.
Just part of the same conversation.
Part of the same conversation. Obviously, the deficiencies that we just looked at are sort of the issues that we want to address. The mobility goals are, you know, sort of what we're aiming for, what we hope to be achieving. These goals were actually reviewed by this board several months ago. They had previously also been reviewed by TEC and CHART. They were reviewed once again prior to this meeting, and have both of those bodies have recommended them to you. But as you can see, overall, our first goal is just a multimodal transportation network, and we've broken that down to some specific sort of sub-goals for system-wide, and then also some specific goals for road, transit, walk, and bike, ride share, travel demand management, and ITS, as well as freight. And then our second goal is a cohesive relationship between land use and transportation. And that just really summarizes to, you know, a variety of specific goals under land use and transportation. The third goal, a more structured and proactive method for pursuing transportation funding, which really kind of speaks to the whole discussion that we had a few minutes ago. So these are being recommended to you in this form by Chart Tech. And we would like approval to move forward with these as part of our long-range transportation planning process.
Okay. Steve, I'm really glad that the Chart's more involved in everything.
Okay, good. Plus.
Thanks,
Chart. Yeah. We have a motion?
To move.
Second? Any further discussion? All right. All in favor?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks. And... then we hadn't added any items to the agenda. Is there anything else that people want to discuss or if not?
I know we're pushing time tonight, but we received a letter from Mr. Ellett.
Yes.
Stating some things that we'd like to be brought up to date concerning the 29, the way it's going to interact with the bypass. I think everyone got a copy of that.
I didn't either.
I don't want to put it on for tonight. Okay. Maybe our next meeting.
Can we get a copy
of that sent out
with the next
packet?
Sure.
Can I get an update on that? But some of the things he brought up in there I've been kind of wondering about. And I know that a lot of this was delayed until we get to the point of where we do the final engineering. Mm-hmm. But I just want to make sure it's still part of the plan.
And that's a great point, Wayne. And I think maybe people don't. I think a lot of people can look at the proposal that Skansa made, and they've taken that to be the final design,
right,
when it was really just, you know, a proposal submission. And I'm sure that there's going to be considerable work done with that once the environmental review process is complete.
Right, and that message keeps getting out there, but I just feel like it's to get it out again.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
And I'd just like to express my dismay about our representative on the Pennsylvania Transportation Board being sacked. Just think that. Too bad.
What? Did transit updates get lost in this agenda?
I was about to say, we were very concerned about time.
Oh, yeah,
since we're ahead of schedule, I think now would be a good time to do a quick turn. Do you have anything to tell us? Anybody else have anything that they want to share with the group? We'll get there in just a second. All right, public.
Hi there, I'm Morgan Butler, Southern Environmental Officer again. I don't want to take up too much time, but as we were going through the discussion preparing for the TTD meeting presentation next month, two thoughts came to mind that I thought might be worth sharing. The first, I'm following up on the point that Sega's just made about the former TTD member. I'm presuming we knew the replacement would be in place by the February CTP meeting. I don't know if anyone in this room has any idea. Maybe just to come back and answer this into the right thing.
Nobody does, but the governor will
matter. If it's not likely that they'll be in place or she'll be in place by that time, I wonder about the wisdom of presenting to the CTP that month as an orphan and go, and perhaps it might make sense to try to reschedule when this NPR actually has a representative on the CTP to be there, since that would be one of the most important people to hear the priorities of the NPR. Secondly, I think it was helpful for the NPR staff to lay out sort of four priority projects that would be represented at that meeting with the CTP. I had a thought that was actually spurred by Mr. Hooja's question when he said, had, I think it was with respect to the proposed widening of 29-50 bypass. Has this been discussed with City Council yet? And Mr. Miller's response was, I don't think that project's been discussed with Council or with the Board of Supervisors. And well, I think it's certainly appropriate for NPO staff to come forward and say, hey, these are the projects we're thinking about representing as our top priorities. I wonder if perhaps we're getting ahead of ourselves to, as the NPO to say, these are the priorities, particularly with the project, which is the 29-50 bypass, that hasn't been vetted yet. I would encourage the members of council and members of the Board of Supervisors here to discuss those four priorities with their respective boards. Maybe it would be a good opportunity to just go through that full set of projects that's being considered and being further studied for potential inclusion in the long-range transportation plan at this point for checking. Thank you.
Anybody else? I just want to clarify that when he asked that question, he thought it was a part of the bypass that ran through the city. But I think your point is well taken. And as far as the, our not having a representative on the CTV in February, one thing I would propose is that we go ahead and do it, but then ask that when the new person is appointed, that we have an opportunity to present to him individually or her individually.
Well, and I think soon after Jim was appointed, we invited him down for a conversation with this board. And I think, you know, certainly when that appointment is made, we would probably want to do the same thing with whatever the new appointee is.
Thank you. Anything else?
Huh? Yeah.